Hello and welcome to Amateur Radio Topics. I'm Kevin, VK6 Lima Whiskey, and today I'm joined by my good friend Steve, VK6 Victor Zulu, and we will be talking about the Commonwealth Contest, formerly known as Baru, which is quite an ancient contest. I think maybe it's the oldest contest, Steve?
Yeah, that's correct, Kev. It's, I don't know whether it's exactly the oldest, but it was first run back in 1931. And yeah, I think that would have been pre-ARRL or any RSGB contest. Mm.
And Baru, that was British Empire Radio Union.
That's correct. If sort of bit of quick history, all those countries that were part of the British Empire were invited to participate in this special contest in 1931. And back in those days, the contest actually lasts for a week.
so a complete week, 7 days.
Yep, it was a British Empire Radio Week, which then metamorphosed into the 24-hour British Empire Radio Union contest in 1935. And I think the quote that I've got here, with the objective of linking all those having an interest in amateur radio.
So it went from a week to 24 hours.
Yeah,
but
that's
right. Wasn't it one stage, wasn't it 48 hours?
Yeah, I think it
went back to 48 hours, didn't it?
Yes, it has had some.
Because I remember seeing a quote from Rusty, G5WP, right, when it reverted from 48 to 24 hours. He said, "Gentlemen, you have destroyed the contest." Something of that nature.
Yeah, no, I can imagine that sounds like somebody from those hallowed days, Kev.
He was one of the stalwarts back in the 30s and 40s and 50s.
Yes, and I think that's the thing with the history. You know, we're talking about some of the oldest call signs, that most people still alive today can recall. And most of the British guys were all two-letter.
They
two
were.
Letter calls.
And one thing with this contest is that we should explain to people outside the Commonwealth,
yes,
you can't actually really take part in this.
No.
Unfortunately.
No.
Which can be frustrating because there's some quite good DX comes on just for this contest. And you quite often don't hear them at any other time.
No, that's right. But what one can, of course, do if somebody's outside the British Commonwealth, is they can actually go to a country adjacent to them and get a call sign and actually take part. Several US amateurs that you and I are familiar with have actually done that, have actually travelled to England to take part specifically in the old Baru or the new Commonwealth contest.
Yeah, so it's an unusual contest in the sense that most people involved with contesting, they're quite used to the CQ Worldwide format or the CQ WPX format. There's lots of other contests out there that follow similar formats.
Yes,
and they're very much sometimes rate contests, but the Commonwealth contest does vary a little bit from this because it's not a rate contest.
No.
It's got an unusual scoring system, and it's very much a contest where you need to apply quite a little bit more thought to the strategy of how you're going to go about getting a good placing in this.
Absolutely.
And some of that is also about where you're located.
Yes.
Because it's not necessarily that easy to win this contest from Australia, for example.
No.
Not at the moment.
No.
Because there's lots of people that travel to the Caribbean, or they travel to Africa, or they travel to Malta, or they travel to a place that will give them an advantage.
That's exactly right.
And there's some very big stations in Canada as well that,
yes,
do well in this contest, obviously.
Yeah, so because I think as the contest really centres around the ability of wherever you work or wherever you live, go to do the contest, to work British stations. And really the other centre of, or major centre of the Commonwealth, you know, is really Canada, and Oceania, Australia and New Zealand probably come a poor third. But as you pointed out, if you want to be relatively close to all those things, all those places, and have an exotic call sign, then the best place to go is either the Caribbean or Africa.
Mm.
The contest has been won quite a lot from both of those places.
And the nice thing about the contest, in a way, is that you get to quite often meet up with a lot of people that you've contacted year after year in this contest. The people are quite loyal to the contest.
Yeah, and I think, Kev, that's a major part. I mean, we should explain that Kevin's and my involvement within this contest really started when we were teenagers. And the contest as a whole tends to have a very loyal following. And I think in your and my case, we've been competing into this contest for pretty close to 50 years.
Yeah, we would be close, 45 years, mm. perhaps, something yes. like that. So I think one of the other nice things about the contest is the fact that the band is not quite as busy.
No.
So in CQ Worldwide, the noise levels are quite high, the band's very congested, the band's a little bit emptier normally for the Commonwealth contest. There's a little bit more competition these days because there's always more than one contest on for the weekend.
Yes.
So that can complicate the issue a little bit. But in a general sense, it does help people that haven't got maybe quite such a big station to be heard.
Absolutely.
So you'll work a lot of guys that are running QRP or people that are running very simple aerials, or they're running QRP and simple aerials. Probably their biggest challenge.
Which is fun. So yes, as you say, Kev, I think very much if you're competing, you need a station which can work very weak stations. You need to be able to work stations who are strong, which is relatively easy, but it's not a shooting fish in a barrel type contest. I mean, both of us are quite proud of the fact that probably each year we probably work at least half a dozen stations who would be running around a 5 watt power level to a simple antenna.
Yeah, that does happen, and that's reflected sometimes with the comments you get back or the QSL cards you might get.
Yes,
where people have said, "Well, you're the first VK, and I'm running 5 watts to an indoor dipole and all this sort of stuff." But that's okay. I mean, and you wouldn't make that QSO necessarily in some of the bigger contests. They'd be buried under the noise.
That's right.
It's an encouragement for people with fairly simple antennas to get on the bands at that time, and especially with 10 and 15 opening up. You can work a lot on 10 and 15 when it's open with a really simple antenna. You don't necessarily need a multi-element beam to work the DX.
No.
With the way the conditions are starting to improve.
Yes. Yeah, I think for the stations who are allied to, the British Commonwealth in Europe, you might be a retiree in Cyprus or, in England, and you've got a chance to be, keen for a day and to work some of the rarer parts of the Commonwealth. I mean, people have been to fairly rare spots such as, I think, Chatham Island, ZL7, Kev.
Mm.
So you can have fun working those stations, but also it's a good chance to work, if you're a G station, to work VK on bands where it's more difficult, like 80 metres or 10 metres. Although stations like you and myself would be active in the CQ Worldwide or CQWPX, if you're a British station, it's much easier to work us in the Commonwealth contest.
Mm. So the British stations essentially can only work outside of the British Isles, apart from headquarters stations.
Absolutely. And I think the head quarter stations, I mean, you said earlier about the unusual format. So if you like, you know, we've got a category, which I don't think any other contest has, where there are a group of stations, which we term headquarters stations. They're usually run by the local, you know, kind of radio society of that country. And those are worth bonus points. Sometimes those stations may be well equipped, but other times they're not. But those stations are really worth working. So it's, yeah. Can you think of any other contest which has that?
The IARU does have a headquarters station set up, which you do, which is worth a multiplier, I believe.
Right.
From what I recall, or the Radio Sport Contest.
Mm.
So, it does exist, but it's not that usual. And the scoring in Baru is different because it works on a system of bonuses, not multipliers.
Yes.
So when you work a bonus, when you work a new call area, the first three call signs you work in that area, you get a 20-point bonus, which does make a big difference. So it completely changes the complexity of the contest. Although it's fun to sit there and run them, sometimes it's, and it might be counterintuitive to stop running them and go and look elsewhere. That's actually what you need to do.
Absolutely. And I think, I mean, what we should add at this point is, so yeah, you've got a bonus station worth 25 points, but a station, you know, within a Commonwealth country, once you've worked three of them, is only worth 5 points. So, you know, one of the first things I learned from Kevin is that, you know, yeah, you pointed out that I would get carried away trying to run lots of British stations.
And you did get carried away.
And I did, whilst you were down on 80 metres mopping up the bonuses with Eastern Canada.
Yeah, I know not everybody is running SO2R, but SO2R does make a huge difference in this contest.
Yes.
Because you can run on one frequency, and you can be listening on another band for the multipliers, and you can, because it's not really a rate contest, it's pretty easy to work those multipliers in on an SO2R basis in the Commonwealth contest. It makes a huge difference. Not many people are actually using that type of facility, but I've certainly found that to be an advantage. Maybe overall the advantage is only marginal, but it, when you're actually in the contest, it feels like more of an advantage than you would otherwise have just with a single radio or single operator, two VFO, for example. That can also be useful as well in the Commonwealth contest.
It gives you the
potential to maybe keep the run going if that's what you really want to do, but still try and work the bonuses on the other bands.
Would you say, Kev, that running, I mean, the Commonwealth contest is a good contest for somebody take their first steps into SO2R?
Yeah, actually, it's an ideal contest because there's not quite as much pressure. If you're trying to run SO2R with Interleave QSOs in CQ Worldwide, you need a lot of practice to do that, and the practice is never over. You can always improve.
Yes.
With that technique. So, and it's quite, if you're doing that end on end, so to speak, for 48 hours or close to it, it's pretty exhausting. Baru's only 24 hours, so you've got a limited time span for a start. There's only going to be certain times where you can really utilise the SO2R. So it makes sense to try and do it in a contest where there's not quite as much rate pressure.
Yes.
CQ Worldwide, you know, I might end up with maybe 4,000, over 4,000 QSOs for the weekend.
Yes.
But in Baru, it's more likely to be maybe 600 or 700 QSOs. Maybe more if conditions are good, but it's a big difference.
Yeah.
Scoring rates are much lower in general.
Yeah, no, that's a very good point.
And you can also use the SO2R to just work multipliers. You don't have to be running.
Yes.
And working a multiplier.
No,
you can use the SO2R to work two multipliers.
Yes.
Line them up on both radios and away you go.
Yes.
So you've got more time to do that. It's far less stressful. And the upside to it, from my point of view, is that it's there's a great benefit to having that in place. Because if you consider somebody's only got the one radio, they can't really do that. They've got to keep hopping around.
That's right. And what we should explain here is that Kev uses SO2R and I don't. I make a lot of use of the two VFOs.
So you're going to have to do more band changes. That's what I'm saying. Which has always been the way. There's always been the way with Baru. You need to do a lot of band changes. Far more band changes than you would in a normal contest, because you don't really want to miss out on those bonuses.
No.
And some of those band changes will be because you found somebody on a particular band and you realise that you need that multiplier or that bonus on another band, and you decide to move them along. Like it or not.
Well, that's exactly right. I think one of the things is, because you're using SO2R and you've got always two bands available, then in actual fact, you make far fewer band changes.
Yes, there's not as many band changes, because I can sit on 10 and 15,
yes,
and then move around between the other bands.
Yes.
But I don't have to... Yeah, that's right. There's only so many bands that are going to be open at the same time in a given situation. Obviously, if the conditions improve, you probably end up doing more band changes.
Yes.
And, you know, fortunately, we seem to have come through the lull in the sunspot cycle, and we're coming up the other side, and the flux is hitting around about 100, and that's going to be good for 10 and 15. And 10 and 15 is where you can work a lot of Gs.
Yes.
But it's quite... Sometimes it's harder to get the bonuses on 10 and 15.
Absolutely. And I think, again, the point that you made earlier about this being a thinking person's contest is you're juggling a number of variables the whole time. You've got the run versus search and pounce. Do you run a lot of G's, or, you know, when do you change into a search and pounce for multipliers? And then that's complicated by needing to make band changes to take advantages of different propagation paths. So before this broadcast we were talking briefly about the other contests, which are let's say more specialized. I think, 24-hour contest, you've always only got one chance at one path. But here, you've often got to make a decision between, or I have to, and you can, like towards the end of the contest, when we have both 10 and 15 open to G's, and I've got to choose which one of the I'm going to put my money on. And particularly in, say, the last hour or half hour, I might make up to half a dozen band changes, whereas you will make no band changes whatsoever.
I can probably sit on those two bands at the end of the contest. Mm-hmm. We're fairly fortunate in Perth to get quite a good opening towards the end of the contest to G on 10 and 15.
Yes.
And sometimes the rest of Australia doesn't always get that opening.
No, that's right.
I mean, you can't change that situation. It's a location issue. Obviously, we don't get the long path openings to G or to Europe that sometimes are available in the eastern states. But certainly on 10 and 15, if you've got a fairly good setup in Perth, you can make more advantage of that short path opening to either at the start or towards the end of the contest.
Absolutely.
And that does help, for sure.
Yeah. And I think another variable which we haven't brought into it yet is wherever you are, and this applies to both of us, both Eastern or Western Australia or, wherever you are in the world, is... If you have an opening to a place at the beginning of the contest, so start at the 24 hours, really you've got to make the most of that opening and maybe use both bands, say 10 and 15, say, yeah, we get an opening at the beginning of the contest. If we used one band, and I've fallen into this trap at the beginning of the contest, and then hope that I'm going to get an opening on the second band at the end of the contest, you can be wrong. And I actually got caught out by this last year, which I'm quite happy to own up to, whereas Kevin was using 10 and 15, and I decided to go with 15 because I thought, yeah, maybe I'd get a little bit of 10 meters at the end, and I miscalculated. I really should have used 10 meters at the beginning and gone for 15 at the end.
It is one of those contests, actually, that every year that I compete in it, I think all the way through, I think I should be doing better than I am, and when I finish the contest, I think I could have done better at the end of the contest.
Yes,
it's just one of those contests. You don't really I don't always get that feeling in some of the other contests I've competed in, but certainly in the Commonwealth contest, that tends to happen. Because back on the contest, you look back on the 24 hours, you think, well, I could have done really better at that time. I could have done better with the opening, I could have done better with the band change choices, or whatever it is. That's partly what makes it fascinating. And conditions are changing. You know, the conditions are better now, and providing we don't get any huge explosions on the surface of the sun heading our way, then and the A index is fairly low and the K index is low, then we should get some good conditions on 10 and 15. It does change the complexity of the contest. I mean, I can remember in this contest at the Sunspot Peaks where 15 and 20 were open all night to Europe, and 10 was open well into the early hours of the morning from Perth.
Absolutely.
And that hasn't happened for a long time.
No, and I think that's where the contest is quite fascinating to do over a period of time, because you learn about openings that you never necessarily knew were there. And I remember reading one of the few VKs that have actually won the Commonwealth contest was Mike Baisley VK6HD back in 1971. Now, as Kev, as you pointed out earlier, there's always other contests on, and at this time there was another VK6 contester who was on the bands, who was in a Swiss contest at the they used to call the HB9 contest. So because the bands were at, this was 71, top of the cycle, Mike was trying to get away from this guy who was also trying to work into Europe. So he went to 15 meters, and this was about 1 a.m. in the morning, and to his surprise, found there was an opening to G at that particular time. So I think those things, it allows you to explore paths that you didn't necessarily realise were there.
All contests tend to do that quite often in a contest, because there's activity from all over the world, in a worldwide contest. You will find paths that you didn't think were there normally, because normally the people would be in bed. The activity wouldn't be there. But because everybody's up doing the contest, it makes a huge difference to potential for the paths. So I'm really looking forward to better conditions on 10, 15 and 20. 40 and 80, well, 40 is normally pretty consistent, and 80 metres last year was very good. It's very good indeed. So you can't really tell until the contest starts, and everybody's got to deal with it as they can.
Yes.
Sometimes the contest will favour the Northern Hemisphere. Sometimes it will favour the Southern Hemisphere. I'd noticed, I think we've got a latitude loading of 1.45. Is that right?
I think so, yeah.
I don't know if that differs from last year, does it?
I think it's pretty similar. For those that, again, one of the aspects of the Commonwealth contest is we have a team contest, and Kevin and I both take part in the of one of the Australian teams. So that kind of brings a whole new dimension to how we actually think about things. And that also, England has teams, Canada has teams, But Australia, in our case, whilst we don't necessarily expect to get a top three place in the contest, that's extremely hard to do. Kev's normally inside the top 10 and has been for many years. But we have fun doing too is working with each other. And Australia has actually won the team contest for the last 5 years.
Is it 5 years?
Yes, it's actually five years.
And I think each time we've been pushed pretty close by a Canadian team.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so we've got to try and maintain that record.
That's right. But I think an interesting aspect that Kev says is because of the team contest, a lot of guys come on who are serious contesters, but we will try and operate as close to 24 hours as possible to do the best individually and for our team.
Yes, I think that's really important, Steve. And one other thing we probably should discuss is the login software.
Absolutely.
So we're both using N1MM+.
Yes.
And I've used that for some time. But you used another program before that was Super Duper. Was it Super Duper?
Yeah, that's correct. This is the one by made by Paul EI5DI, and is very popular in Europe and has been very popular with contesters for a long time. A lot of software, it. Interface is very relatable to the early K1 CT program, and back in the days of not connecting my computer to my radio, it was a really good program to do, and in fact it's got very good rig control facilities, but. And this is the thing. I think if you're a contester who does other contests, it's always best to do one software, use one piece of software. And I really came down to the fact that if I was going to be serious about other contests again, I was better to use N1MM+. On the other hand, if you're going to Peru for the first time and you really like to use computer logging rather than computer logging and control, then I think Super Duper is still a pretty good option.
Yeah, pretty good option for Peru. I think I looked at it a few years ago, and I think I was using WinTest at the time, and I looked at it in relation to Peru, but it and other contesting, but it didn't quite give me the SO2R functions that I really wanted.
No.
It was a bit limited in that regard. So
yes.
it kind of got dismissed on that basis.
Yes.
And then I morphed from WinTest probably over to, I played around a bit with DXLog as well, which is actually a pretty good program. That's based on the WinTest architecture. But I moved then on to N1MM+, and I've stayed there ever since. And I've briefly had another look at DXLog a month or two ago, and it does now support the Brew contest, and it supports, actually DXLog supports more contests than N1MM.
Wow, I never knew that.
It's got a tremendous library of contests that it supports, but for Brew it's still just not quite right for me. So I'm still better off sticking with N1MM because it's very compatible with everything I'm doing here. But DXLog is it's improving all the time. Most of these contest packages, people would realise this if they're using them. Most of them have got updates on a fairly regular basis. Most of them have been improved. Most of them are developing along as time goes on. So it's not necessarily just the one package. And N1MM is a very good program. It's free. DXLog is also free now. It used to be subscription based, but it's also free. I'm not sure, quite sure about Super Duper. I'm not sure if it's free or not.
Yes, Super Duper is basically free. Paul does ask if people can make donations, but it's basically free. So we're in a pretty good world, really, in terms of the software that is available to us. I mean, one of the things I think I've learned from you is sometimes one particular program will take a lead over another, and that lead may be retained. But it's a good idea to look on the CQ Contest Reflector or talk to your friends that are good on the software side of contesting to see what you're using is still the best that's available for you.
Yeah, so it does make life a bit easier. Obviously, we're not all of us, but Steve and I started off with paper logs back in the day.
Yes.
And this is a whole different way of contesting once you move away from a paper log or manual log. And in actual fact, most of the contests now don't even support paper logs being presented.
No.
I think they've completely canned that now. I'm not sure with Baru, I'm not sure whether or not the OSGB still accepts a paper log.
Yeah,
I think
there's a kind of grey area there, Kev, whereby... listeners will be aware, most file format which all contest organisers like their logs to be given in is Cabrillo, and I think there are a few very simple loggers which or older loggers which there are people, for example, connected with the Baru Commonwealth Contest organisation, you can give them these files and they will produce a Cabrillo output for you. But I think one of the things, and I think to keep on this theme, is Kev and I have both seen over this year rules for some of the major contests change, which are allowing much more freedom in terms of how you operate and in terms of your communications during the side of the contest. And I think software is likely, you know, we've seen the facilities that the software operates, you know, can do for you before a contest, during a contest, and after improve. And I think those contests are likely to evolve, and the software will evolve with them.
Yeah, I think that's always going to be the case. I mean, we're essentially operating, Steve and I operate in the unassisted category.
Yes.
Or the open unassisted category. So technically speaking, we're not able to take advantage of all the software will offer.
Yes.
And all the spotting assistance and the other facilities that are out there which would place you in an assisted category.
Absolutely.
We're kind of a little bit old school, and we like to run around and find our own DX. But having said all that, there's certainly a place for the assisted category. It's not like there's anything wrong with it. It's just a personal preference whether or not you choose to operate assisted or unassisted. The people that operate assisted, you know, when I talk to them, they say, well, it's just more fun. It's easier to find the DX, it's easier to work it, it's more fun to be on the band, we work more stations. And that's a valid point. I mean, it is, after all, the hobby and contesting is about having fun. So if it wasn't fun, you wouldn't actually probably want to do this, particularly at the end of a, you know, Baru's a bit different, it's only 24 hours, but at the end of a 48-hour contest, you start to query about, am I having fun yet? And the answer is probably no. Is it, what the bloody hell am I doing here?
Well, that's right. And I think it's going, and this is really to say to people, look, you know, Baru is a very old contest, but it has both unassisted and assisted categories. And I think for those, I mean, we have young people, or in fact, people that are now middle-aged who have come into the hobby and who are also are computer gamers, and they're used to you know, kind of a very fast interaction, and having the ability to do assisted and use cluster spots and move between those things, you know, it makes that it's a broader church, I think, and keeps people interested.
And all these software packages are designed to integrate with whatever mode or whatever package you choose to operate the contest within. So, you know, it's a good contest. We can recommend it. It's, if you're in the Commonwealth, it's fun to give it a try. And you don't need to have maybe such a huge station as you might to be competitive in some of the other contests. I think that's actually really important. With a simple antenna, you can still do pretty well in the Commonwealth contest, no matter where you are in the world.
Yeah, and that's absolutely right. And I think the other inducement for example, it is a chance to work some of those rarer Commonwealth countries. Now, yeah, just for example, for us, because it's a 24-hour contest, often VK6s will be available on bands, I was thinking 40 metres in particular, which is always probably the bread and butter band for Baru. Kev and I can be worked really when this, you know, well before your sun starts going down, us and other VKs, but that time would normally be when we're fast asleep.
So we're quite often, yeah, it can be 3 or 4 hours before on 40 metres, 3 or 4 hours before sunset in the UK. The G's can start coming through on 40, particularly if you've I've got a beam antenna here on 40, Steve's got a beam antenna, particularly stations that have got some sort of directional antenna, that it's quite possible to make that path at that time. And that's not always, people are not always looking for the path at that time. Strangely enough, on 40 metres it's almost easier to work the G's well before sunset in UK. Because once the sun goes down, the band in the UK becomes much noisier.
Absolutely.
It's much more difficult for them to sometimes hear us. But I've got beverages here, and that does actually make a difference. It makes a difference on 40 and 80 metres. It makes a big difference to the noise level and what I can actually hear on those bands. Because 40 metres is fairly noisy here. There's a lot of crud on there that you don't really want. And if you're using a beam antenna or the transmit antenna, there's a lot of signals coming in from the north, which make 40 a really noisy band. Being able to filter those signals out a bit with a beverage makes a big difference, a lot of difference.
And that's right. And I think, again, this is sort of an inducement to those people who are listening to this broadcast in the UK, is even if you have a relatively modest antenna on 40 metres and you get on 3 or 4 hours before your sunset, Baru is the one time during the year that you'll hear signals that you probably wouldn't normally.
You should be able to hear certainly the VK6s. You won't necessarily always hear at that time the VK2s, VK3s. That might be a bit harder.
That's interesting.
The band obviously changes a bit as you get closer to the sunset in the UK.
Yes.
So, and the VK2s, VK3s and the ZLs have got the advantage to be able to work those Gs on their long path as well.
Yes.
But we don't really get that on 40. We do get a bit of a long path opening, but it's pretty marginal. We might work a few stations on long path.
That's right.
But it's not a given.
No. I think that's right for us. But for those in the UK, if you've always thought what it might be like to work an East Coast Australian or a ZL via long path on 40 metres, Baru is a good chance to do it.
So just to sum up, you know, for people that are new to contesting or people that have got limited stations, or even if you've got a good station, but if you're new to contesting, I think, and you're in the Commonwealth, this is a good contest to have a play around in.
Absolutely,
it's not too much pressure. It's a friendly contest. You don't have to turn it into a rate contest. You can just go around and you can do search and pounce. That's quite a good technique to employ in Baru, and have a bit of fun with it. And with improving conditions, there's going to be the band activity is going to be probably quite a bit better than what it's been over the last few years, I think.
Oh, absolutely.
So whether or not you're in Australia, New Zealand, Canada, or somewhere else in the Commonwealth, or in the UK, we could really thoroughly recommend this contest for, well, obviously newcomers or people that are regulars in the contest. You know, they know it's a fun contest, and it's still a good contest to compete in.
Absolutely.
Yeah. All right, Stephen, I think we'll wrap it up there.
Okay.
It's been very good to discuss Beru. And there will be another podcast coming up shortly. Probably a little bit more about antennas, receive antennas, and some other
Space beams.
Maybe close space beams. Maybe we'll discuss that. Stephen, I've been working on some other projects here, but there's not enough time to fit them all into this podcast. And we try to make this one just around about Beru. But we're really interested to discuss some of the other antennas we've been working on, because there's a lot of things out there that are not necessarily new, but there's new ways of looking at them, new ways of designing these antennas, and trying to, not necessarily try and get a free lunch, but to try and just squeeze a bit more performance out of antennas that can, you know, fit into most people's backyards.
Yes.
But might just give you a bit of an edge, not just for contesting, but for working DX as well. So probably within the next month or so, yes, we'll do another podcast, and might be something a little bit of a wrap up on Beru after the results are in, and then we'll continue on with the contest and the antenna and design and build and test theme.
Yeah.
So 73 is for now from me, Kevin, VK6 Lima Whiskey.
Yeah, and 73 is from me, Steve, VK6 Victor Zulu.
And good luck in the contest.